This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Why consumers might care if the U.S. government can't pay what it owes, plus the friction of many competing video streaming subscriptions to choose from, and a trip to the zoo. I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning to you. We'll lead with the fight over raising America's debt ceiling to pay for past Democratic and Republican spending, with actual U.S. government defaults expected to start in late spring unless some deal is reached. Some House Republicans are using the ceiling to pressure Congress into unspecified spending cuts. The head of the International Monetary Fund has just warned that U.S. consumers will suffer if the U.S. stops paying back its debt. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has that.
International Monetary Fund Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva tied the fate of U.S. consumers directly to the debate over the debt ceiling in an interview on 60 Minutes. Congress has to raise or suspend the debt limit so the U.S. government can continue borrowing money to pay its bills. Otherwise, the U.S. will default on its debt. Congressional Republicans want Democrats to agree to budget cuts in exchange for raising or suspending the debt ceiling. The Biden administration says that's a separate discussion. Georgieva told 60 Minutes the pandemic and the war in Ukraine have taught us that what she calls the unthinkable can happen. If the U.S. did default, it would be a lot harder for the federal government to borrow money in the future. It would pay a much higher interest rate. That would trickle down to consumers because rates on things like mortgages, car loans, and credit cards are tied to what the U.S. pays on Treasury bonds. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Netflix customers have been expressing annoyance, if not anger, after reports the platform would take its crackdown on password sharing from foreign test markets and deploy them in the U.S. Now, the company has since walked that back, saying it posted the new restrictions accidentally. But according to research from Oxford Economics, streaming customers have a lot more to be grumpy about, like too many different streaming options. And the thing you do want to watch is often on the one that you haven't signed up for yet. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more.
If The Sopranos ushered in the golden age of TV, shows like Stranger Things and White Lotus are marks of the surplus era.
Where we are so overwhelmed.
Brandon Katz follows the entertainment industry for Parrot Analytics. Even 5 years ago, he says most customers only needed one or two subscriptions.
It wasn't really quite the Hunger Games of entertainment via internet delivery that we have today.
In today's fractured landscape, Katz says couch potatoes like himself have to shell out a lot of money to keep up with the most popular shows and movies. And according to Sundis Alfie at Oxford Economics, all those options don't necessarily translate to customer satisfaction.
Well, you sign off work and then you try to find something to watch. It takes more than 10 minutes, you get frustrated, and then you're done with it.
Oxford Economics survey of customers found they want everything in one place.
Whatever streaming service I'm consuming, my shows or movies, on that homepage, I want to see my music, my e-commerce, you know, maybe messaging apps.
To hold on to subscribers, she says streamers will have to make themselves indispensable. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Stock index futures are down to start the week, with S&P futures down 0.9% and NASDAQ futures down 1.2%. Friday's nice and hot jobs report, lowest unemployment since May of 1969, has investors jittery about interest rates staying higher longer. Our relationship with animals is evolving, and in some cases, So are zoos. Some urban zoos date back to the late 19th century, and some of those are spending millions updating structures constructed in a very different time. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports.
When visitors first enter the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore, they pass Victorian-era wrought iron cages. Signs with black and white photos show animals that used to live there, including bears, hippos, and hyenas. 67-year-old visitor Linda Hanna remembers seeing them as a child.
I felt like they paced a lot, and you just felt sorry for them.
We are the third oldest zoo in the country, and we have evolved quite a bit over the past almost 150 years.
Kirby Fowler is president and CEO of the zoo and was behind the decision to reopen this older section to the public in 2021.
For people to walk past these cages and understand that these are not good habitats for animals, that's an important lesson to send to people. Oh, sorry. That's one of our peahens.
The zoo is planning to keep three of the cages and is raising millions of dollars to build more natural habitats, including one for primates. Fowler points to the zoo's otter exhibit as an example. It has a waterfall, rocks, and a glass wall that visitors peer through as the female otter dives for fish. One child trails a stick along the glass, which she seems to follow. Zookeeper Daniel Regan calls for the male otter to join.
Hudson!
And seconds later, he comes scampering over the rocks.
They know their names. They're highly intelligent and also highly motivated.
This exhibit's a far cry from those cages, which were part of many urban zoos.
They were designed around having a lot of animals in a small space.
Nigel Rothfels is a historian and author of Savages and Beasts, The Birth of the Modern Zoo. Some zoos have repurposed old buildings as event spaces for weddings, or in the case of the Maryland Zoo, a brunch for grown-ups called the Flamingle.
It's that whole piece of recognizing, okay, we're doing more than just exhibiting animals. And part of it is diversifying the revenue.
It costs at least $40,000 a day to run the Maryland Zoo. As a nonprofit, it gets funds from private donations, state support, and admissions, plus extras. Like for $5, visitors can feed acacia leaves to a giraffe.
So I'll give you one.
Thank you.
Today, there's a short line waiting with zookeeper James Sedano.
All right, so what you guys are going to do is just reach on out. You're going to give her the entire piece all at once. She'll take the entire piece with her tongue.
A visitor hands a small acacia branch to the giraffe, who takes it without a hitch, raising some money while getting people invested in the animals. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Flamingle. I'm David Brancaccio. Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.